I do think you don't know when those moments are that are pivotal moments in your life. And sometimes we just are too busy in our lives and you don't realize that that's a pivotal moment.
Welcome to Ever Better, conversations on becoming ever better every day with people who live inspiring, joyful, and daring lives. I'm Lisa Vogt. Thanks for joining me. My guest today had an impressive 30-year career as a corporate communications executive for some of the world's largest companies. And now, she's a novelist, a food blogger, a mentor, and a world traveler. Her name is Phyllis Piano. She says that after leaving the corporate world, she fell back into the arms of her first love, which was writing. She and her husband split their time between California, England, and the Midwest. And when she isn't packing a bag, making artisan sourdough bread, or cooking with lots of garlic, Phyllis is working on one of her many novels. When we spoke, her first novel had been published a few months ago, her second was about to be published, and she was editing and writing her third and fourth novels. Her first book is called Hostile Takeover, A Love Story, and it was a finalist in the 2016 Best Book Awards. And just a note before you hear from Phyllis, if you're thinking about a transition in your life that involves a corporate career change, starting a new project, or even a new business, you may be interested in my Discover What's Next coaching program. I work one-on-one with clients to help them start creating a more fulfilling future. You can learn more by going to my website at everbetteryou.com and clicking on Work With Me. And now, here's Phyllis Piano. So Phyllis, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's just terrific to be with you. Thank you.
Yes. Well, could we start with a sense of where you are right now, where you live, and a little bit about your family?
Well, it's interesting is that my husband and I live in California, and and we live north of Los Angeles in a town called Thousand Oaks on a lake called Lake Sherwood. And it's a beautiful setting, and we love it. I'm originally, though, from the Midwest. So I'm a Midwestern girl.
Okay.
And my husband's from Liverpool, England.
Wow.
So this is kind of a long story that we divide our time. And so we spend a lot of time in Liverpool, England. I'm originally from Milwaukee. We spend a lot of time there.
Okay.
We spend most of our time in California. But we feel like wherever we, you know, a lot of times when we travel, we feel like we're going home because Liverpool's home and Milwaukee's home, and it's wonderful. So we that have these different places to go and friends and family in the different places, and I feel very fortunate and very, very lucky.
That is wonderful to have more than one place to call home. Yeah, I feel like you're really fortunate. Is the weather and the culture and just the feel of Liverpool extremely different from where you live in California? Are they similar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, very different.
Yeah.
Very different. But so wonderful in each way. I mean, obviously in California, the weather is really good, although we went through a period of rain that we haven't had. My husband and I lived here 10 years now. I think it's 11 years this year. And we've never had this kind of rain. And so it's been wonderful because we've had the drought and our lake is back up to historic levels, which is fantastic. So the weather's really good. And as you can imagine, we have a lot of visitors from England and from the West when you have good weather, which we enjoy. And have, and we, in fact, we had some friends that left this week who were visiting actually from Wisconsin. And so, and then, but the next visitors we have are coming from England. So,
so
we
neat.
Have a lot of visit. Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. And for me, my corporate career took me from Wisconsin to Connecticut, Connecticut near New York to Houston, Texas, Houston, Texas to the Boston area and Boston here. So we feel like, well, the only time zone I haven't been in, lived in the U.S. is mountain. You know, I've lived in the other ones a couple times.
So
we have such an interesting view of the U.S. And because we, you know, actually spend so much time in Europe and England, we have that perspective as well. And our jobs took us to Europe as well. So we feel really, really fortunate to be able to travel and experience different parts of the world and the U.S.
You had a very impressive corporate career and then What I think is so fascinating is somehow you transitioned into being a novelist, and you have a food blog, which makes my mouth water when I look at the pictures. And I know you do coaching, and I'm sure you're involved in lots of other really interesting things. So can you, well, first of all, can you talk a little bit about your corporate career? And then if you can share how you transitioned into doing these other things with your life.
Well, you know, I felt very fortunate. I started my career in General Electric in their medical business, and I actually met my husband because he worked at GE as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel very fortunate to have worked with some terrific people. I also worked for a company called Cooper Industries, which got bought by Eaton, and I worked for Raytheon and Amgen, mm-hmm. the biotechnology company. And so my job took me to these different places I mentioned. But, you know, and I had the responsibility for corporate communication, which includes internal and external communications and, you know, the web and the annual report and branding and mm-hmm. sometimes pieces of marketing and, you know, it's some one job actually at government relations as well. So, you know, yeah. It gave me an excellent grounding, and I just met and worked with so many interesting people, but I always had a dream, and the dream that I had you know, was to be a writer. I started to do it when I was in my 20s, and I thought it was so terrible, I threw it away.
Oh, really? Did you start writing a novel?
Yeah,
or a short story?
And it was just a novel, and it was just terrible. And I thought, you know, I'm one of those people, I think, that I have benefited by having the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And by having the experience, I can call upon things. And I was very fortunate in my job, you know, to travel around the world and,
mm-hmm. right.
and have all these different experiences. And, well, you know, what I write is fiction. There's little things in there that, you know, I've experienced or a place that I've been to or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt I really needed the experience to call upon. In fact, I wrote an essay and it got published, I think this year, about how it was always my dream, you know, to be a writer. But you mentioned the food stuff too.
Yeah.
And I've always loved to cook, but I never had time. I used to cook on Sundays and, you know, because I'd be working and, you know, cleaning the bathroom at 10:30 at night, as you well know, as a working mother.
Yeah.
you know, and I always wanted to cook. So when I stepped away and I wanted to write, I thought, and I always wanted to retire early, so I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, now I can cook. I did some consulting. I still do some consulting. But, you know, I cook, and I just love, I think about, wow, what can I cook? And I grow herbs outside, and I can do that. I actually taught myself how to make sourdough bread.
Nice.
And, well, this was in England. My husband, there's a show, there's a baking challenge they do here, but it's a great bake-off in the U.K., and there's a guy named Paul Hollywood and a wonderful woman named Mary Berry, and they do it. And in the Sunday paper, they have great things in the Sunday paper. My husband got me these little booklets, you know, of baking from Paul Hollywood. He's quite a baker, and he's actually from across the River Mersey from Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
So he's from kind of the area. But so I started baking these things, and I got to kind of the end of the second booklet, which came in the second Sunday paper. And I said, there was sourdough. And I said, well, you have to build your own starter. You know, you flour water and shaved apple, so organic apple, so it ferments.
Oh,
you have to build it over weeks. And it took me forever and I was trying to do it, but I did it. And now I bake all these artisan bread and I just love it. And I love to cook.
Oh,
I do
wonderful.
Recipes. I meld my own recipes. So, and I, as you mentioned too, I do coaching. It's really important to me to help young people, whether their friends or family or people who are, I don't know, and just come to me. I really want to share some of the things that I've learned to try and help others in their careers or in their life if I can.
Yeah. So going back to the British Bake Off show, I think this is on Netflix. I think the British version
is
on Netflix. Okay. I haven't clicked on it yet to watch it. It's on my list, but I hear great things about it. Like people get addicted to that. So I'm afraid of watching it once actually. At what point did you start writing again? Because you were in your 20s and you were writing something and you decided it wasn't good. Of course, I find that really interesting too. Like who's to decide what's good and what's not, right?
But I mean, like most people are right. I think you're your own worst critic.
Sure.
You know, so you're going to be hard on yourself. But, Yeah, it just wasn't good when I looked at it in my 20s. But the thing, but the thing that was interesting is, you know, my corporate career, and I also wrote an article about how being a chief communication officer set me up to be a novelist.
Right.
And I, that's an article I've written that's out there as well. But, and part of that is because what do? In my corporate job, you're going to write internal articles for the website. You're going to write press releases. Right. You're going to write speeches. You're going to write in other people's voices. You're going to write in other people's voices. And so it was great preparation. Yeah. So I honed my skills by doing that.
Well, so I want to ask you about that because I also do corporate communications.
Yeah.
And when it comes to doing something in my own voice, my own blog, you know, my podcast, it actually took me a while to adjust from that corporate voice or to representing a nonprofit that I used to work for, you know, all these other companies that I used to work for and write for, to Lisa Vogt. You know, this is Lisa Vogt's voice. And I would hear like the corporate stuff in my head, you know, and I had to get that out. And really it took probably about a year before I could successfully just sort of write as myself. I don't know. Well, maybe I'm not even there yet. I don't know. I'll keep working on it. But did you have that problem?
Well, I would say yes and no, maybe perhaps in a different way. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I did find really great, but different, is being in the corporate life for so long. It was, you know, I spent 17 years at General Electric, a great company, worked with some great people. And I remember when I left there to go to my next company, it took me 5 years to not say, this is Phyllis Piano from GE. So I think, I think that from being in corporate communication and because my job was representing the company, that it took a while to just be me, but it was so wonderful to just be me, you know?
Right. Yes,
to be,
it is.
Because I think what you do in a corporation, and they're wonderful in so many ways, but you do have to kind of fit a mold. You do have to perhaps, and you don't even know that it's happening, it becomes something that's not necessarily yourself. So then to step away from that and become yourself is just wonderful, because then you can become in touch with what was I like in my 20s before I, you know, because I joined my first corporate job, I was 22.
Yeah.
So, you know, to get back to the roots of really being yourself and the things that are important to you, because you kind of look at these things and say, wow, because so much of my life, and I'm sure life, your life as well, is being in that corporate environment. And I found it fun to be myself again. I found it just wonderful to kind of rediscover myself. But to answer your other question, it was scary as well, because I didn't like what I wrote, you know, so much when I was in my 20s. I think we all do this. You know, you say, I'm kind of scared to do it because what if it's not any good? What if I can't do it?
Yes. People are very afraid of that.
Well, and so, I finally got to a point because I did some consulting and I said, okay, I'm just going to do it. And how do you do it? How do you do it? Different people do it differently. I just sat down and I went chapter one, page one, and I just started writing.
Yeah.
I just started writing and it was so fun and so great. And to your other question about the corporate voice, what I found funny is, you know, sometimes when people review it, some people say, oh my God, there's so much corporate stuff in there. And then there was another person who said, and then the person said, oh my God, I wish she would have talked more about the corporate stuff and about like a hostile takeover love story. So that's about deals and things like that. We'll talk more about the deals and the synergy. So clearly it depends on where you're coming from. Someone who's looking for the romance says, don't talk about that stuff. And somebody who's really into the corporate stuff said, why wish you would talk more about that stuff? So the thing is, you have to learn is, where is your voice? Some people are going to like it a lot. Some people are going to want more of this or more of that. And you just, you know, be your own voice. You have to be yourself. And, you know, I try to be.
Very true. Yeah. If you try to write for everyone else, you're never going to get anywhere. Yeah. Well, when you start writing, this is an interesting discussion about the process because everyone has a little bit of a different process. So you start writing and then do you time yourself like I'm going to write for a half hour or and not look back at what I did? Or do you try to write a whole chapter without going back and editing or how do you do that?
Generally, what I've tried to do, and in fact, it's interesting, I was working on my fourth book, although I started at a fourth one, but I think I'm going to do this one now.
Fourth book.
Let's
talk about that.
I was working on it today, and it's interesting. different people do different things, but generally what I'd like to do, what I like to do is mm-hmm. input and then go back and edit, right? So if I write a chapter or more and I write until I'm getting tired and I think, oh, this is not coming out as well, go away from it and come back. It's going to be better. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm really good in the mornings, and it's great when you travel a lot. If you're jet lagged, get up at 5 and write a bit before my husband gets up. But
okay.
I'm better in the morning, mm-hmm. you know, to start doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I write it and then I go back. And I just did the first chapter yesterday mm-hmm. For this, what I hope would be my fourth novel. And I've been back at it again and again and again in editing today.
Okay.
And part of it is I think what you learn, because when I did my first one, you know, I learned a lot about how do you start it and kind of grab people from the start. And hopefully I'm learning and you know, getting better at that. And you're constantly thinking about how to choose the right words and language. And
And
it's never over, because you can edit it. I could go back now and edit my book that's been published, you know.
Right.
And I'm sure most writers are the same way.
Yeah. I have heard several writers say, I just don't know when I'm done. Like, how do you know when you're finished editing? Because you could keep rewriting and rewriting and rewriting. And I think it's kind of like an artist also, like a painter always wants to continue touching up his or her painting. And at some point you just have to say, okay, I'm done. I'm going to send it to the editor.
You're a writer too. So, you know, you get to that point. Mm-hmm. I know in my last book, the one that I'd say with my editor right now, I actually changed to happy to glad, is, you know, the joke is when you change it to happy to glad. I actually did it. I said, that's it. You know, it's ready to go. And I don't know how many times I think it's 10 to 15 times that I'll do a total edit.
Wow.
And right now my second book is going to be published in August. And I got back from the publisher that one of the most key things you have to do is the one paragraph that summarizes the book and helps sell the book.
Okay.
And we're going back and forth on that right now, because I thought I had it, then I didn't have it, then somebody else didn't like it. We'll try this. And so we're trying to get those exact 100 words down, and we're struggling. But the cover, I love the cover. I had a very distinct idea for this book, unlike my first book, the cover. And I have a graphics background. That's one of the things.
Oh,
as well.
Okay.
So, you know, when I was in my corporate career designing an annual report or any kind of brochure, I'm really particular about the way it looks. And so we struggled a little bit on the first one till we got there and they're happy with it. But the first one, boom, the second one now has really come out well. So I'm still promoting my first book. I'm working on, you know, the design elements, we're working on the back cover right now of my second book. I'm going to have a call to start working on the PR plan for my second book. Mm-hmm. My third book I've just sent to my editor, and it's going to take her months to get it back to me. And we generally do chapter by chapter. So I'll be going back and forth. And that I'm writing my fourth book.
Wow. That's a lot to keep in your head.
Sometimes you get a little confused with those, but you have to do things. I have my own website. Mm-hmm, I never had this before.
Right.
And when I was in corporate, I managed the corporate website, but there were teams that did that. Now I had to, it's kind of great. I had to learn how to do this stuff way on my own.
Yeah.
Now the publisher helped me set it up, and there's a woman that's there that can always help me. But, you know, man, I'm doing it myself. And
it's
fun. It's fun to learn these things, and you think, wow. Because, you know, when you're traveling around the world and you have a big team, there's lots of, you know, pulls and tugs on your time, and you're very grateful to have wonderful people to work with and do all this stuff. But, you know, it's just me, babe, and I'm there doing it, and it's exciting.
Yeah. A lot of people write, a lot of people have written novels and short stories, but they haven't gotten them published, right? I mean, that's really tough. So how did you go about actually getting your first book published, and now you're on second, third, and fourth book? I suspect the first one is the hardest.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had a college friend, a wonderful author named Chris Radish, and she's published fiction and nonfiction, more fiction than nonfiction, but she's doing nonfiction as well. Mm-hmm. And I just called her and I said, help me out. And she sort of guided me and mentored me and actually turned me on to this publisher, which is more of a hybrid publisher, not like the big five independent and mm-hmm. not like, you know, and that was more of the way to go for me because I waited so long to do it that I really didn't want to wait around for like one of the big five or something like that. And it's publishing is very fragmented today, mm-hmm. very fragmented, and it's very tough. So I've been very fortunate. I work with Spark Press and they're also She Writes Press and the wonderful professionals that are there and they help me on everything, you know. But, you know, I got my own editor from my college friend. So before went to the publisher, I had my own editor because it's so important to have somebody look at your work mm-hmm. and tell you this works or doesn't work. And mm-hmm. I love my editor because she helps me so much. She's such a brilliant, you know, woman and helps me a lot. So by the time I get it to the publisher, I like to think it's fairly clean, you know, quote
yes.
unquote.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So much going on. So Phyllis, how do you stay inspired? How do you keep your energy up? Because you're just so active and you have so many things going on. Are there routines or rituals that you rely on in your life?
Yeah, very much. I think everyone, that's the interesting thing when you come out of the full-time corporate world. One of my really good friends who actually I worked with at GE said, you have to create your new routine.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, no matter what you do, you create your new routine. And what is that routine? You know, and I wasn't quite sure what it is, but I'm really happy with it. And I know I saw on your website where you talk about when you change your life and you kind of want to get up every day and feel joy and feel, you know, invigorated by the challenges ahead. And mm-hmm. that's really how I feel. And I think it's a lot of it is the writing, but a lot of it is the people around me. I try, as we talked about, I try to mentor people, and that's young people and people mid-career and later career.
Right.
And so I try to, you know, be there for people. I look forward to engaging. I try and on my calendar in any given week, I may be talking to someone who's trying to get into medical school or mm-hmm. a young person who's trying to get a promotion or a young person who's interviewing and wants a tip, a young man who wants to understand HR speak and did not really understand a performance review. What can you interpret that for me?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. We all feel like we all need that from time to time.
So you try and draw an experience to help people. Someone who thinks about who's leaving a company. I've connected with this fantastically talented, great chief communication officer taking on her first role, but moving from the UK back to the US, starting a new role. So buying a house and coming back and her husband having to relocate, young child and pregnant with her next.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And all this going on and just, I'm trying to say, what do you think about, what should you do as a first time chief communication officer? So we go through the list and mm-hmm. I love talking with her and others, you know, things. So I feel energized. They keep my energy up.
Oh, that's
you know?
Great.
They keep my energy up. And I mentor a young woman who went to my high school and I spoke at a leadership lunch when I was in Milwaukee. She's from Milwaukee. She worked hard. She got a full scholarship mm-hmm. to Dartmouth.
Wow. That's fantastic.
And, well, really fantastic because she was homeless at 13.
Wow.
So, you know,
incredible.
She's a big part of my life now and we're going out for her graduation. And so I feel energized by people around me, by, you know, thinking about if there's anything I can do to help them to share mm-hmm. things, you know, and mm-hmm. traveling. I mean, we're traveling all the time and I do keep writing as I'm traveling. Actually, another essay I wrote is writing while traveling. I wrote the book. That book I did about, I think I did 10,000 words on a flight from LA to London of that book. Maybe 5,000. I don't know. But I edited a book. I've done promotional. I've written essays. I've, you know, done original input writing on books. So I try and, if I can, use my time wisely, but I have more time than I used to have. So I actually did in my second book, there's a woman who's cleaning the bathroom, you know, on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And that's a real experience, right?
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, exactly. Where can women do that? So, yeah, so that's how I think I keep my energy up. I keep my energy up through others. And trying to learn, right? You're always trying to learn something new.
Yeah, for sure. You are. You are definitely the ever better woman. Like it seems like every day you're probably trying something new or thinking about doing something new or in a different way.
It's a weird thing, but I'll wake up early and my husband tends, you know, sometimes he'll go to bed at the same time, but he might stay up and watch something later and I tend to get up earlier. So, but I'll wake up early in the morning. So it's 5 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and the plot for this book I'm working on now just came to me.
Oh, wow.
At 5 in the morning. But I had a book event, actually, with a book club a week ago Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, this past Friday, I guess. Yeah. And the women said, because they said, it's great that you did this book, but in The Woman's a Lawyer, but why don't you do a book where the woman's the CEO? And I said, you know, I will. I have ideas for that. And I thought, they're right. You know, we need role models. We need women to be, you know, executives and leading. And
mm-hmm, we do.
So I'm doing that. I'm doing it. But, you know, work is not all there is to life. And I think any woman who's as you well know, when mm-hmm. you, especially when you hit a crisis point or a health point
mm-hmm.
or a point where you reflect in your life, work isn't everything, you know.
Right.
So I think even a CEO who's a woman has a lot to learn.
Right. Absolutely. It's interesting how you say in the morning is a magical time for you.
Oh.
I had a guest named Robert Sharp, who was on several weeks ago, and he talked to me about how he would walk every day and words and ideas would come to him. And if he didn't walk, nothing came to him, but like that was his magic time and that was his magic process, which is really, it's really interesting to me about that.
Well, I agree with that. And that for him was the walking, but mm-hmm. I think for me, I've always loved that time, which you can't always get, where you live in your head.
Yeah.
And you imagine in your head and you come up with things. And I feel like, I'm deprived if I don't have that time.
True.
You know, to just live in your head a little bit. And I think that's why you can do it at 5 a.m. in the morning. You're just laying there,
right,
nice and cozy, don't have to get up right away. And you go, wow. And I also get, it's weird, but I get excited about new recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be thinking about, well, I've got this plot. Oh, I got some dough ready to go. I'm going to bake some bread. And oh, I'm going to try that new recipe with the salmon, you know? And I get excited about those things. It's a little bizarre, but
yeah, it's a great combination. Bread and salmon and writing and hanging out with your husband. And it's all great. It's all great stuff. Oh my gosh.
It's wonderful.
Oh, wow. Well, I feel energized.
Well, I hope so. You know, and when people, you know, when people come and visit us here, like we just had these guests. So one of the other things I learned a lot about moving to California was California wine. And I just wasn't a fan. I liked more European wine before I came here. But I got really into, it's boring, but the Pinot Noirs.
Hmm.
So when you read my books, there's a lot of Pinot Noir in there because I really like that. So when our friends were here, one of our friends from Wisconsin had never been to California.
Ah.
So of course we went to Santa Barbara. We went to the wine country, which is near here. Most people think of Napa and Sonoma, but there's a great wine country right around Santa Barbara.
Right.
We did some wonderful tasting. If you ever saw the movie Sideways?
I did, yes.
It's that's right here. Yeah, so we go to the places that are in Sideways, and then sometimes we make people watch the movie, and they go, oh, we were there.
Oh, that's really fun. Okay, Sideways tour.
So we've done it a million times. My husband is a little bit, do we have to see that movie again? but anyway, I love that. I love learning about wine, and I love, not that I'm an expert in any, but I know what I like. And in fact, when we go over to Liverpool once in a while, I'll bring a wine that you can probably only get here because
mm-hmm.
I met a wine merchant in near downtown Liverpool and I'm friends with him. So I'll bring him a wine. And we'll do a swap.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. And I was wondering too, when you're in your Liverpool house, do you sometimes like turn to go to the bathroom or turn to go to the kitchen and you're not going the right way because you're in your California house? Is that like, do you get mixed up about where you are sometimes in the morning?
Only sometimes when you wake up in the morning, you might go, okay, where am I? Maybe a little bit. Your point about them being different.
Right.
In Liverpool, we're right in the downtown. We're in the middle of everything. They just put in a great statue of the Beatles, which is right at the waterfront
where
the Mersey is.
Right.
And we can see the back of them out our window.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And we can walk. You know, in fact, one time we were there and I just wasn't feeling that well. And we can see music and all these things. My husband loves, we see a lot of music. He said, hey, I'm gonna go out to this place. Sean Lennon was playing with his band in this tiny little place.
Oh, phenomenal.
And Roy just walked over and saw it. And there's plays. Liverpool is just a fab city. And if you're ever in England, you got to take the train north from London.
Okay.
But there's so much to do. And, mm-hmm. you know, the food scene is really opened up.
Well, I'll put Liverpool on my travel list.
Me
so
too.
I hit it at some point in the future. And so, Phyllis, this has been incredible. I do feel so much more energized than before I got on Skype with you. So we've covered a lot of ground, though, too. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to share before we sign off?
Well, the only thing I would say is when you go through your life, and I think this is in one of my books that's going to be coming out, but I do think you don't know when those moments are that are pivotal moments in your life. And sometimes we just are too busy in our lives and you don't realize that that's a pivotal moment. And sometimes they're not big moments. The big moments are easy to figure when you get married or you have a child or you
sure.
there's a death, you know, or an illness or a mm-hmm. sickness.
Right.
You know. You don't know. And I think sometimes we move too fast. We move too fast and you have to reflect on those moments. You have to let them wash over you. And so sometimes, and I don't think I did a good job of it because I was too darn busy when you're working and, you know, traveling 60 hours a week and people are depending on you. That's my message. It's step back. Think about what's important. Don't get swallowed up in the trivial. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a fight with somebody at work or somebody's trying to do this or that, or there's some sort of crisis. Mm-hmm. You know what? You won't remember it in the mm-hmm. scheme of things. It's just stay true to yourself, to your ethics, to your integrity. Do your best, but don't get bogged down in things that are at work, because in the end, most of it doesn't matter.
Mm.
You know, it's all about, right. it's about your life and those moments that are most important to you and the people that were important to you in your life, your family, your friends, and work colleagues. I'm still very close to a lot of work colleagues.
Nice.
So, but you know, let it go. Think, reflect, and think about the lessons when something happens. What did I learn from that? And what could I have done better in that?
Great. That's great advice. That's great advice. Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you, Phyllis, for joining me on Ever Better. It's been such a pleasure. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And good luck to you. And thanks for doing this. It's a great thing. It's a great thing for people to listen to and learn from. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Hi there. It's Lisa. I hope you enjoyed that discussion and learned at least one thing that will make a difference in your life and help you to get ever better. I have one quick request. If you're not already subscribed to the Ever Better podcast, please go to iTunes or Stitcher and click the subscribe button so that each episode automatically downloads. The more that people subscribe, the more the podcast is promoted on iTunes, and that would help me a lot. I appreciate you listening, and if you have any thoughts about the podcast, feel free to send me an email at Lisa, L-I-S-A, at everbetteryou.com. That's Lisa at everbetteryou.com. Thank you, and I will talk to you next week.